Off the Ball Breakfast.
Mad the wrestling in the 90s was. Like, people cutting their face open, jumping off the top of the cages, like sleeper matches, buried alive matches. Like, as a kid, I watched it and thought, like, oh, this is all real, but it's watered down now, isn't it? It's nowhere near it. When's the last time you've seen somebody being hit by a chair in wrestling?
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball
with Energia, proud supporters of rugby at every level across Ireland. Think of the possibilities.
This is News Talk.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. You can WhatsApp us today 0879 180 180. It's time for this week's Saturday Panel. The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by Energia. Experience the best of men's and women's club rugby at the Energia AIL Finals. Hashtag think of the possibilities. So tomorrow, the Aviva Stadium will host the biggest day of the club rugby year in Ireland, AIL Finals Day. You all Bohemian play Blackrock Cottage in the women's final at 1:30. Then it's Clontarf versus St Mary's in the men's final from 4. To look ahead, we're delighted to have in studio the ex-Munster and Leicester back and current Nace coach Johnny Murphy and the former Dolphin forward, rugby writer and current assistant editor of the Irish Daily Mail, Hugh Faraday. We'll also be joined very shortly by Alison Miller, ex-Irish international Grand Slam winner. How are we doing, Johnny and Hugh? How's the form?
Grand, thanks, John.
Yeah, all good. All good.
Club rugby, Hugh Faraday, when you were growing up, what was that? What did that mean?
Well, I'm old enough to remember the dawn of the AL, but I remember what preceded it, which was in the 80s, a very old school system of friendlies where clubs had traditional matches against each other, meaningless games, essentially, you know. You had minor competitions like the Leinster Senior League, Munster Senior League, but most of the year was spent with these friendlies. They might be organised on the morning of an international. So, say, for example, Sunday as well would come up to play Wanderers before an international and they'd all go to the game afterwards, this type of stuff. But it was so amateur. You also had a situation where you might play a team in the north. I remember travelling up to play Estonians or someone and you'd make a weekend of it. So all the Alakadoos would travel up. It was Blazer City. And after the match, there'd be this big lavish dinner and swapping of ties and all this kind of stuff. And it was all very nice, all very old school, all very traditional. But it lacked focus. And they decided in the end of the 90s that they wanted to tighten it up. There was a bit of opposition to it, I remember. And it started off with 2 divisions and then expanded to 4 after 2 years. And it changed everything. It changed everything. I would say Johnny would know this as well. You could probably trace the rise, the explosion in rugby in Ireland. Rugby was a niche sport until the 2000s. Maybe Brian O'Driscoll's 3 tries in Paris might be kicked off, but that came from Munster popularising the game, and Munster came from the clubs. If you look through the roll of honour of the AIL, it was Munster dominated the 90s until Mary's, who are actually playing the final tomorrow, yes, won it in 2000. And if I can indulge you, I remember, because I used to read everything, and going into the first AIL, what Donegal Callan would refer to as the blue media, the Dublin media, were all predicted that Wanderers were going to walk away with it. Wanderers had won the Leinster League and Cup double, and they had Philip Matthews, they had a host of stars, and Munster clubs were completely written off. What they hadn't factored in, as you know, Johnny, mm-hmm, from playing down there, was a massive chip on the shoulder. Munster clubs felt they weren't getting represented by national selectors, which were seen as a kind of a Leinster-Ulster cabal. And they were lying in wait for the Leinster clubs and they destroyed them. Like Young Munster, Shannon, Gary Owen, Conn, they ripped through the Leinster clubs and the Leinster clubs didn't know what hit them. And that's why they dominated through the 90s. And that the players that came out of that Munster club scene graduated into the Munster side under Declan Kidney when they became a professional. And then when Warren Gatland picked them after the loss to England in 2000, that was the turning point. And it all kicked on from there. So Irish rugby's success, I would say, could be directly linked back to the dawn of the AIL in 1990.
And then I played in Young Munster when I was in Leicester, and they still talk about that final with Mary's.
Unbelievable.
And the trains going up, and they had to put extra trains on for the amount of people and the amount of Young Munster supporters that were there. Like they outnumbered the St. Mary's by like 3-4 to 1, and there's some incredible stories of people going up with their dogs and all sort. Like, it's just incredible, and it is folklore. And I didn't play a lot of club rugby when I came back, I played a huge amount in Lansdowne before I went to Leicester. But like my brother was in Carlow when they got promoted to the AIL Division 1. I still remember, and talking about it now, I remember when they beat Young Munster in the first AIL Division 1 game they played. And the crowd, I think there was about 8,000 people in Carlow. Like you couldn't, they had to take over the GA grounds, car park. People were walking. I think some people had to walk 3 or 4 kilometres to actually park their car and get in. It was that mad. And I always remember then I was kind of in fifth and sixth year when Billy was playing at the for Carlo at that time. And I remember looking at the team sheets and he went down to Corcon and it just happened to be in a week where there was no Munster game. Mm. League wasn't as kind of like the URC now, URC is now. And everyone played. Jim Williams played. Raj played. Everyone. Like Corcon were basically Munster at that time. And it was, Mikko played. It was incredible. They got hammered, but Billy said it was unbelievable to experience that as an amateur to experience that. I went to Lands End then and I played, I left school in 2002. I made my debut for Lands End in 2023. And this is kind of the shift that has happened in AIL. When I played, there were 4 or 5 internationals played. We played Gary Owen in the old Lansdowne front pitch. Dominic Crotty played. Killian Keane played. Jeremy Staunton. Niall Rowan was on the Lansdowne team. He went on. Angus McKean. Like players that had played for Ireland and were household names within the game. And that doesn't really happen a lot now, but it was incredible to kind of put yourself against those players, like as a 18-year-old to be able to throw myself into, I was at fullback and Dominic Crotty was the Gary Owen fullback. Jeremy, who I played with in Leicester subsequently, he was at 10 for Gary Owen that day. Like it's the rise, as Hugh said, it really is connected
to expand on that, like you're dead right. In the 90s, the way the rugby was at the time before professionals, before the provinces took over, if you had a good game on a Saturday, you could be playing Ireland A.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember clearly the selectors would all be there. The papers were awash with coverage of it. It was on TV, isn't it?
Yeah, it was TV, so
sports stadiums.
Yeah, I played on RTE.
There was a newspaper, the paper I work for now, the Irishman Sunday, that its original incarnation was called The Title. You're pretty too young to remember The Title. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday paper that used to cover all 4 divisions, all matches. They do a team of the year for each division, top scorers, all this. It was like a Bible. Everyone bought it. The coverage was huge. And as Johnny says, like, I remember, like, I never got to your level now, but I remember having a good day against Gabriel Fulcher when he was Ireland international. And all of a sudden, you're kind of going, you're starting to dream. It never happens, of course. And maybe the internationals were coming down to that and maybe not, maybe struggling with the motivation. But it was huge. And you were going up against, like, top quality players.
Yeah.
The best players in Ireland at the time. And the crowds came out. And just, Johnny used a great word there, folklore. There's so much folklore with the AIL, that Young Munster side. Yeah.
What was your folklore?
Well, not my I won't go there, but like just to talk about Munsters for a bit, because I have a lot of time for Munsters. They developed this reputation as like, they probably don't like it because it was unfair. They were a hard team, but I never thought they were a dirty team. They were a hard team.
Yeah, hard team.
They were known as the Cookie Monsters. Mm. They played in Greenfields, which is known as the Killing Fields or the Garden of Get Somebody. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I didn't mean your personal folklore, but like when you were growing up, characters, the rivals, the whole flavour of it.
Well, back at maybe Limerick, Cork, division wasn't as pronounced then because it was all United and the Munster take down the Dublin Kingpins kind of thing. Mm. But I really enjoyed that Munster final, the Munster's win over Mary's when Brent Pope was sent off. Ger Earls, who's Keith Earls' dad, yeah. I was fortunate enough to play against him a good few times. It's not just a cliche to say he's the best player never to play for Ireland. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
He came out of Thomond. A lot of players went to Munster's from Thomond. Thomond dominated Munster junior rugby in the late 80s. Aidan O'Halloran and these guys, Duggan, John Duggan, they all graduated to Munster's and they were a hard team. Like, they had Franny Brosnan, he was 6'4" centre.
I don't know him, by the way. I don't know him, by the way.
And
the
But they were to go up against a team like Mary's, who had like a lot of the Mini Cunningham and these.
Yeah, their back row was unbelievable.
It was a phenomenal day.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And like you remember, like I remember, I think it was my second or third game. Went up to Ballymena, and like Ballymena at that time, like it was, you know, and you hear the stories when I was in Munster again of like the battle, the physical battles of those. Young Munster, Shannon, Ballymena days, you know, like real, real kind of proper rivalry for a number of different reasons. But it really, and then I suppose on the other side, if the AIL now, like say the likes of maybe Enda Bahan and Steve Rooney and those guys that I would have played with in Lansdowne, they were coming towards the end when I had started in Lansdowne, those guys would have definitely been professionals now. You know, in this day and age, with the pathways.
Bowen, I played with Bowen. I was in Lansdowne for a year in 94. Yeah. His young fellow is Billy Bowen.
That's right, yeah. And yeah. Like, Enda played maybe 10, 12 times for Leinster. He got offered a contract, but he had a really good job at the time, and it wouldn't match. Steve Rooney was the same, played for Leinster, played all the way up to Ireland A. But there's guys like that, Pádraig Brennan from Carlow, another one. I know he was in and out of the Munster side for a while. But there's guys like that would have definitely in this day and age have had 5 to 8 year careers within the provincial setup, and that was the quality of it then. And I think it's kind of come back around. It had a bit of a dip and that, but I think the quality of last 2 weeks, two weekends games leading into tomorrow was definitely picked up.
You've been coaching since you finished your professional career, Johnny Murphy. You've been coaching with Nice, yes?
Yeah. So
is that vocational or is that?
A mixture of both. I suppose when I finished up, I wanted to kind of, I was living, I moved back home to Kildare that summer and was approached with a clear idea of trying to get the club promoted to 1B where we are now. And we did that in the first year and then we went into kind of semi-finals and finals of that 1B to get promoted. But like, I always say 1B is fantastic and it's a crazy league. Like this year we had 42 points and every other year 35 would get you safe. We had to win the last day with a bonus point to guarantee our safety. And it was just like UCC are playing today to stay in the division, but they finished on 40 points, which is unheard of, you know, and we were actually only 2 wins away from potentially being fourth going into trying to get a playoff spot. But the jump from 1B to 1A is off the charts, you know, like it really is. It's come back around now and the level of guys that are playing in it, a huge amount of guys from academies or sub-academies or guys that just didn't make the grade, like you're talking 0.5% of a percentage off in terms of being at that top 1% of professionals in the country. And it's really, I love coaching it. I do school as well at Newbridge College. So it's kind of probably the pathway within Ireland from a coaching perspective. And then I suppose for someone like me in the next 6 to 12 months, it's kind of, you either travel or you hope something comes up that you can apply for within the provinces.
Well, and then how much time is it taking then for you to be a coach? Obviously all the travel involved, is it all consuming? Is it hard to balance with family time?
During the season, it would be, particularly in our league, because there's a huge amount of travel. We have 4 teams up the north. We have 2 teams in Cork. So that kind of stuff is you're kind of gone all day. But it's 2-3 nights a week, and then you've got all your review and preview stuff. So you're kind of planning kind of half of your week.
There's
around.
No more overnights anymore, Johnny.
No.
Up and down on the bus.
Up and down on the bus. Bus trips, very important for the lads from a social perspective.
Are there still cans on the bus?
Still cans, yeah. Some bus drivers tried to stop it, but I think
because they banned cans on the train, which is like a death blow to the AIL. Yeah. Like,
so I think
it's for everybody as well.
Yeah, sorry,
it's not just an AIL.
There's a bit of a Jim Hamilton who I played with in Leicester. There's a bit. I remember being on a bus trip with him, and we had cans on, and the bus driver pulled over, and Jim got in the driver's seat and said, "Well, if you're not driving, I'm driving." So there's a bit of that at on AIL weekends as well. So I think the bus drivers just need to kind of accept it and get on with it. But yeah, it's a huge social part of the game as well.
Ex-Irish international Grand Slam winner Alison Miller's with us as well. And Alison, you were at Port Leash and then Old Belvedere.
Yeah, Port Leash first. Started off at the... We were actually the complete bottom in Port Leash. And we eventually got up to AIL Division 1 in 2012. And I had an interesting AIL journey because I was very loyal to Port Leash. So while I was playing, I had dual status for Galwegians and Highfield. So I was just missing the Ulster connection. But yeah, we went all the way from the bottom to the top in Port Leash, which was great times really when we were a small club. And we were the only AIL Division 1 club in Leinster or outside of Dublin at the time. Unfortunately, us going up coincided with me joining at the time the full-time sevens programme. So then I actually wasn't allowed to play at all then when we got up. So I got to play two games for Port Leash, unfortunately. But yeah, most of the AIL, you know, at the high level I would have played would have been all Belvedere. When Tom Tierney, you know, rest his soul, great coach, great man, took over the Irish women, he said, "Now you'll have to move up." So I moved to Old Belvedere and unfortunately never played in a final, but like that, had great times. My actually husband has better AIL stories. He played for Carlow back in the day and he'll tell you all the stories about playing with different guys and then unfortunately going down to games sometimes and Irish internationals are released and then it's game over. But he's a lot better stories than I do. But yeah, we had great times in Old Belvedere. And actually, I played a game in 2024 completely out of the blue. So that's probably my most interesting AIL story, that I played a game in 2024, having not played for about 5 years. And I knew then, actually, because I stopped playing in 2020, COVID hit. Then I had two kids and I was going to finish that year anyway. But then it just, as it happened, I had kids. So I played a game 2 years ago and I realised, no, I'm finished. I'm finished. And I decided I was playing in the back row. So just so no one could go, "God, she doesn't have it anymore." Yeah, I'm playing a different position, guys. So
was it just physically hell?
No, I actually was fine. The game was fine. I just probably was very unfit. Like, I'm fitter now than I was then and I've been fitter since and before. But no, I just think I had enough. Like, I think you get to a stage where you're happy enough not to be playing. But I enjoyed it to a certain extent. But I wouldn't mind playing rugby now against people my own age. That'd be a different story. It's playing against the younger ones is the problem.
And you obviously have a big GA background from Leash as well, Alison. How does a GA club and a AIL club or rugby club compare? Are they kind of similar, community based, or is it similar?
I wouldn't think so. Now, no. Look, I only have my experience of certain clubs. So I have my experience of Port Leash Rugby Club, which would be a junior club.
Yeah.
I have my experience of Old Belvedere, which the men, you know, over the years they've gone up and gone down, depending, you know. And then the women always will stay at, you know, AIL Division 1. And then I've played a little bit of dual status with Galwegians up west and then a little bit with Highfield. So I've only got four clubs to really compare. I don't coach. So for me, no, a GA club is very different. Very, very different. Completely different. You play predominantly, like my football club would be Arliss Killeen. And then my dad was obviously involved in Aer Óg for a long time in Carlow, which had huge success. And that's like a town club as opposed to, you know, then my home club would be Arliss Killeen, which would be a very, very small rural club in Leash. Now, they've always performed well and made a lot of county finals. So, just different. You would, like, if I would look at, like, even though I played for Port Leash, the nearest club to me would be Carlow. So, which would be 10 minutes away, it would be my husband's club. And yeah, it'd be a different feel. Just, yeah, it would be a completely different feel. Similar in ways, but if you were to try and describe it, I don't know, Richie, you might be better able to help me describe it.
Well, I suppose I think I played for Ellistown in Gaelic football. I jumped the fence at my under-8 George's thing. That's where I'm headed now. I'm in my shorts. I'm headed to an under-8 blitz for Two Mile House. That's where we live now. But even when I retired, I played a bit of junior B football with Ellistown. But there was never any doubt that, like, Ellistown was you know, your club is your club from a GAA perspective.
Yeah, you don't go, like, if there is someone that moves, it's kind of, you know, they're still talking about 10 years later.
Yeah, and even the guys who are playing inter-county currently, like for, you know, that have jobs in Dublin or whatever, they're from different counties, like, they all still play for their club back home, you know, and they're kind of, there's little to no movement around.
I think that used to be the way in rugby, though. Certainly, back in the day, you were one club person. I mean, my club, Dolphin, we had a long-running enmity with Cork Con. All the Cork clubs hate Con because they dominate down there. I didn't know you played for Highfield, by the way.
I was down in Cork, living in Cork, so...
They hate Con more than anyone. But there was a story that, you remember Tom Kiernan, the great administrator and Ireland fullback, and Munster coach.
78.
Mm. He was coached in 78. His brother, Jimmy Kiernan, was a fantastic player. And he fell out with Con and joined Dolphin. And I'm not exaggerating now, and the Cons might be texting and saying, Farley's lying about Cons again. But they wouldn't come into the clubhouse in Dolphin for years afterwards because of this long-standing feud over Jimmy Kiernan joining Dolphin. This go down to the Tory top at the bottom of Pierce Road. I used to drag John O'Driscoll in, that'd be Mick O'Driscoll's older brother.
Yeah.
And then it's all died down now, and there's much more player movement now. The Cons took the Manny brothers off us in 98. I always remember that, Connor and Cian Manny. And, you know, I still go up to Temple Hill and I ask for 3 Guinness, 2 Heineken and the Manny brothers back. You know, this kind of thing. There used to be that kind of bitter hatred between things. I think it's died down now because players are moving around more. But certainly it was the way if you joined a club, that was your club. Like, it certainly was. And if you left, it was a big scandal, you know.
The Manchester United-Liverpool thing.
I can only speak for Cork. I imagine it's the same in... Limerick, certainly, like Shannon and Gary Owen wouldn't be best pals.
No, the Limerick clubs would definitely, and I suppose in Munster in particular, and obviously where they're at the moment, there has been a big shift. Like when I moved there first in 2010, you know, you'd ask a young lad, like, you know, what's your club? And he'd say, oh, Young Munster, Shannon, you know, he'd name one of the rugby clubs. Where you go down now and you ask him, what's your club? And he'll say, oh, the Pearshake, or, you know, like he'll say generally probably.
But there used to be pubs in Limerick, Charlie St. George.
That's right.
The Young Munster pub.
Yeah. And then Shannon had there was a parish thing in Limerick, and that's kind of gone now, and maybe to the detriment of Munster.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the health of the AAL at the moment? I mean, for you, is it in a good health?
It is. I think over the last kind of 2-3 years, there's definitely been a big shift in that. And I think that's probably come from a men's game perspective with the restructure of the AAL that happened. A huge amount of people that wouldn't have, as Hugh said, that probably wouldn't have got on with each other from an administration perspective, be it, you know, Lansdowne and Wanderers talking to each other, but everyone kind of clubbed together to kind of I wouldn't say stop, but definitely get everyone's opinion across the IRFU about what was needed. There was talk of cutting the numbers down in the top two divisions and trying to create, which they kind of have, but they say they haven't, in like a kind of an intermediate section. And I think that kind of galvanised the clubs and really pushed the AIL as an entity to push themselves out there. So most teams will stream all their games live. They'll have the Club Scene podcast. The lads do a great job. Really good listenership to that. The crowds are getting bigger, and there is a kind of push. They really, stakeholders in the AIL really want to push to show the quality of that's there. So I think the restructure has been good in that sense, that it's really pushed the clubs to be better and to show the IRFU, because they disagreed with a lot of what the IRFU wanted to do, and they stopped some of it, but they still have very much disagreed with some of the restructure now, kind of drawing a line across the country and going north and south. And you have teams like Skerries that, you know, I spoke to someone from Skerries a couple of weeks ago, and they're like, sure, look, we're going to enjoy playing in the Ulster Junior League because all of their clubs are up there. And like Sligo, that they're trying to do it to stop travel, but then there's two or three clubs that are going to be travelling more because they're going to be playing in other provinces, either right down south or right up north. So, but I do, from my experience, I think 1A and 1B particularly 1A is in a rude health. Like you go to, you see last weekend, like Tyrone Your Mary's was an all ticket affair. It was absolutely jammed. Now I know that is, and the hatred of those two is still very much there. They get massive crowds to all of their games, but I think that was a big one. Really good crowd in Castle Avenue for Tarf and Lansdowne. So like I think, you know, it is starting to move and people are very much watching it because it's out there now every Saturday at 2:30.
Just let you know, folks, Kerry 8 points, Clare 1-4 in the Munster semi-final, Tipperary 1-3, Cork 1-3, Fulham have beaten Aston Villa 1-0 in the Premier League. Hugh.
Just to go to build on what Johnny's saying there and the question you asked Alison earlier, I can't speak for GA clubs, but I do think for people who are listening who've never been to AL match, you know, I think rugby's strange. As we said earlier, it exploded in the 2000s and a load of people came into the game who maybe didn't have any background in it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was a popular, it was an occasion to go to. And a lot of media too, a lot of people suddenly adopted rugby because they could see the audience it had. When you go to an AL game, you know, rugby gets a bit of a hard time from maybe soccer and GA, particularly for being elitist and up its own nose and all that kind of stuff. You go to an AL clubhouse, Naas, Cashel, Dolphin, Highfield, Portlaoise, it's very down to earth. Everyone there is vested. They're either, it's full of like guys like myself, former players lying about how good they were back in the day kind of thing, you know, Alec Adu's, people there watching their kids. It's everyone there has got skin in the game. You go to a Munster game or a Leinster game, that's not necessarily the case. I'm not slagging that off because it's added to the growth of Irish rugby. But it's a very unpresupposing environment. I would feel confident, and the three of us would, of walking into any AIL clubhouse in the country and getting into the rhythm of it straight away. Because it's the same feeling wherever you go. You know, I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of clubhouses around the country, and it's a very kind of warm, welcoming, familiar environment. And as Johnny says, the standard is going up and up. And where I would draw the line with GA, the best advance in AL in the 30 years since I've watched it is the growth of the rural clubs. You know, it started off as the big city clubs, but now you've got the Naas and the Cashels and teams that would have never gone near it.
City of Armagh, and there's another place. City of Armagh is actually probably the highlight of the year to travel to, like in terms of what they put on for the players, how they look after the squads, how they look after every single supporter, not just the members, not just the Blazers that go, like the president, the vice president, you know, what they put on. The City of Armagh is a proper club.
And it's not a facet of the game that's up itself. There's nothing better than AL Saturday.
Yeah.
You go along, you have your few pints, you tell your tales afterwards and you're home by 7 o'clock, half cut. Do you know? It's a great day out.
Responsibly.
Take a break.
Yeah.
Alison Miller, the AL game for the women, how is the health of that at the moment?
It's obviously at the top level, it's very competitive. And if you look at the two teams, you know, Bowes and Blackrock,
for the
teams that have been named for tomorrow, a lot of those girls are currently, you know, have played under 20 or have played provincial rugby for their provinces or are future internationals. So in that sense, yeah, it's a good, you know, there's a good standard. It's probably lost, not to compare to men, but back, you know, in the 2000s where you could be playing maybe, you know, because the game had only just gone professional and you'd get guys dropping in and they didn't have a game for months or whatever. So probably back in 2015, 16, you still had Irish internationals because they weren't professionalised playing week in, week out. And then the games were very competitive, could be very competitive, different stages in the competition. So now with the introduction of the Celtic Cup, that's kind of taken all the Irish internationals or anyone's on the page for talk about selection. They wouldn't be currently playing IL, and they just play Celtic League the whole way. And then it's the Six Nations. So
like
unfortunately, you've lost that. And then what I would say is I'd worry about, you know, the predominantly Dublin clubs, and you've got Tullow women there are an AIL club in Tullow. So they'd be, you know, anomaly in Carlow, rural club. So they're like an anomaly in Leinster. They're the only ones really, like we were in Portlaoise at the time. And then you've got very Dublin centralised, which everything, and even we're talking about maybe guys that traditionally only in GA that only played or you know, still driving back. So yeah, you just like to see it kind of maybe around the country a little bit more spread out. And then what tends to happen is all the players will go to the same club, so then it just doesn't become as competitive as it can be. But
they're going to add a couple of clubs, aren't they, Connacht to Leinster?
Yeah, they're restructuring now next year again, and they'll have playoffs and different things like that. But yeah, like it is, and like even, yeah, like not everyone can play for Ireland or not everyone can play professional rugby. So the AAL men or women is a really good standard, and we have to remember that it's only a very small portion of, you know, players that come through academies or come through school system or club systems that will get to play professional rugby. Yet they're all very, very good players, and then they get to play in the AAL. So we like, rugby's not just for that select elite few that can play professional. We have really good players playing in the AAL, men and women, week in, week out. And it's really important that they have that opportunity to do that. And we do know that, like, you know, development of players or is not always linear. So we will have anomalies. We will have someone like Jerry Kerr that has come out of the AAL and then absolutely, like I said to him one day, give him a contract, look at him, like he's able to perform. Or, you know, I looked at Joey Carberry a few years ago when he went from playing and then going to Leinster and then doing what he's doing. So in terms of, in terms of athletic development of players, there will be people that will go a different journey or a different trajectory and might, you know, have a few years in the AAL and then go on and get picked up. And not just, like, there's lads that have gone from AAL to, like, French clubs or, you know, D1 French clubs or English clubs that we don't necessarily... Now,
there's one last night, actually, from a Wesley perspective. He came off the bench, prop from Wesley. He came off the bench for the Newcastle Red Bulls last night. So he left. He left 2 weeks actually before they'd won the league. He didn't play. We played in the second last game, didn't play in that game, and then he came off the bench last night. It was only due to warm up, they had an injury. So there are guys like that, and I suppose Jerry Kerr is probably that poster boy. But on Alison's point, I think it's really important that from a professional perspective and looking at the research of guys playing, like, in schools and clubs, it's really important that, you know, professional players, both male, they're kind of like the top 1%. Yeah. But, like, you know, you can't cater just for that 1%. You have to cater for everyone else in the 99%. But the AIL guys at 1A, they're probably in the top 98.5%. Yeah. They're just that tiny bit off. And guys, as Alison said, it's so true. Guys, you know, they develop at different stages, at different positions, and the ability to do that. Like, I remember my time in Leicester Tigers, Billy Twelvetrees was released out of the academy. He was 20, and he signed. Leicester are actually incredibly lucky that he just happened to sign for Bedford Blues. It was kind of, he was from that area. He could have gone to Ealing or somewhere like that, another kind of championship side, and he ended up, I think he averaged something like 22 or 23 points a game, and then Leicester signed him back the following year. He ended up being a British and Irish Lion.
Yeah, yeah.
But so those guys, like, the AIL needs to facilitate those players that are dropped, that come back. We have a young nine with us, Ty Brophy, played Irish 20s, didn't get an academy contract, played with us for a year, managed to get picked up by the Sevens before it was canned, and then has signed a 3-year academy deal with Leinster. So you have to, you know,
people forget about Johnny Sexton.
Sexton,
I remember him playing in Stafford that year when they
would have played a good three or four times against him.
Cantabomi was in his way for Leinster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was playing for Mary's.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he was playing well, and then when he stepped up, he was ready.
You know? Yeah. You are so right, because like that, it's not linear, you know, and even form or youth or someone is in your, there's maybe a position, I don't know, you're 12 and there's three or four 12s there, and then, you know, it opens up. So it is important for that.
And someone playing tomorrow, like Ivan Sirocco, like playing for Leinster last year he got a cap for Leinster, but Ivan has been a stalwart of that Tariff team for 10 years, and the ability for him to stick at that, get picked up, get capped by Leinster. And this is something that will kind of frustrate me in the sense of being a coach at school and development, and within the pathway there can sometimes can be seen, well, you know, he might not be a professional, but he still might be able to give, like, playing Leinster 19s or Munster 19s or Leinster schools or Leinster youths or Irish clubs and schools or Irish 19s. That's incredible. You will always have that.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of, and with that, you broaden the pathway, in my opinion, that you're getting more people in and you give those people those opportunities and they have them as life memories for forever. Mm. And like Ivan has that, Jerry Kerr, obviously he's a bit different because he's been, he has a full-time contract now, but so many people like that get called up, get opportunities. And like, that's what it should be all be about.
Got to take a break here. Johnny Murphy, Alison Miller and Hugh Farrelly on the panel this week on Rugby, the club rugby final sponsored by Energia. The All-Ireland League finals tomorrow, men's and women's deciders. Just before we go to the break, bringing up to speed on the Gaelic games. Kerry, 13 points. Clare, 1-4. Tipperary, 1-4. Cork, 1-4. That's an interesting scoreline. Hurling as well. We have John McDonagh Cup. Dan won 17, London 15 points. Fulham have beaten Aston Villa by a goal to nil in the Premier League. Ryan Sessegnon with the goal. Championship results, Charlton 2, Hull 1. Middlesbrough 5, Watford 1 and West Brom 0, Ipswich 0. And the Women's Six Nations, England 12, Wales 0. Ireland play France at 10 past 8 in Claremont tonight. This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. More rugby chat to come after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball
with Energia. Proud supporters of rugby at every level across Ireland. Think of the possibilities.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Part two of the Saturday panel previewing tomorrow's Energia All-Ireland League finals. Alison Miller, the former Grand Slam winner with Ireland and Noel Belvedere player, the ex-Munster and Leicester back and current ace coach Johnny Murphy, and the former Dolphin forward, rugby writer and current assistant editor of the Irish Daily Mail, Hugh Farrelly, all in studio with us. Both matches staged at the Aviva Stadium. UL Bows versus Blackrock at 1:30 tomorrow, the women's final, then Clontarf versus St Mary's in the men's final at 4:00. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by Energia. Experience the best of men's and women's club rugby at the Energia AIL Finals. Hashtag think of the possibilities. Johnny Murphy, what are the possibilities for Clontarf and St Mary's in this final tomorrow? So Clontarf are going to go back to back. Mary's haven't won one since 2012.
I suppose I have to get my cards out on the table here quickly. I coached in Mary's when I retired first in the school for 4 years. So I would have coached about 7 or 8 of the guys in the 23 tomorrow. So I'm going to be aligned that way, but it is going to be difficult for the lads. They've been on an incredible journey. They got promoted and then relegated into 1B, and then 2 years ago they won 1B. I think they had it sewn up with about 3 or 4 games to go, the league that we're in. And last year they brought in the likes of Dan Goggin and these guys to kind of give them a bit of experience, and Dan moved kind of from the centre into number 8. He's been excellent for them. Connor Dean had some time in Connacht. They're 10, excellent player. You've the likes of kind of Tom Riley, Mick McCormack, both played Irish clubs. Ronan Waters, Irish clubs. Miles Carey, Irish clubs. So they have the best thing about Mary's is they have a cohort of guys that have been around a long time and they're still only kind of 24, 25. And a lot of those guys that I've just named have probably, outside of Tom, have probably been playing with each other in the school since they've been, some lads have been playing each other, obviously in the club since their minis, but they've went on and they had really good successful schools careers in the school. So they have that connection. And it is, I suppose, Mary's like that. That is the backbone of Mary's is probably the school, but you look at what Clontarf have and watching the game last week, you've the likes of kind of Dylan Donnelly, guys like Jim Peters, Paul Deeney's playing, he's involved in Leinster. I think Hugh Cooney has added a huge amount to them this year in terms of historically Tarf were like, you know, strong brute force. Don't give them any entries into your 10 metre and they'll be really clinical there. But watching them last week, and Reese Ruddock coaches Lanzini, he coached with me in school, talking to him over the last kind of 4 to 5 games, they've started to play a lot more. Last week they ran the ball out of their own 22 off kickoffs 3 or 4 times, which historically they haven't done. And that makes them really dangerous because they don't, they have that power game as well when they get into your 22. Very hard to stop the maul, scrum. But the ability to play, and I think the likes of Hugh Cooney and Tadhg Bird, their fullback, he's one of the high performers within Division 1A. You look at Opta, he's at the top of all of the all kind of main stats. So it's going to be difficult for Marys. But I hope for the lads that I know really well that they can really, they put in a, if they put in a really big performance and manage to stop their maul and their D in their 22 can stand up to the power that they have, I think they have a right chance.
How do you assess tomorrow?
Clash of styles, I say. Hasn't Pantoff Hooker scored like 94 tries?
Yeah, that's
Little
right.
Little and Donnellan.
Yeah.
I like Conor Dean.
Yeah, he's a good player.
His outfielder was Paul Dean, who was an out half.
85
and 82. He played centre when Ali Campbell was out half, and he played for the Lions in 89. And he was a lovely handler, and he's a very graceful way of playing. He wouldn't be known as a great kicker. I see that in his young fellow as well. He's a baller,
like. A player,
So I don't know. Like Johnny would have more in-depth knowledge, but I would imagine that Clontarf will try and beat him up.
Yeah,
that they've Keen Healy coached them.
Yeah,
And Marys might try and run him. So it should be very interesting.
Goal kicking centre Mick O'Gara, interesting.
Yeah, he's a good player. 12. Mick will have played Irish clubs this year. Real hard, kind of old school 12, kind of like that Kevin Maggs style. Mm. But probably. But can play ball too. Miles Carey, 13, he's excellent and probably someone that just below that kind of line. Same with Ronan Waters. Ronan Waters was sub-academy in Leinster. They have some real, real quality in their back line. And I think if they are to win the physical battle, as Hugh says, they have to move them around to win that physical battle, try and gas them and then get them into those wider channels would be a big thing. But it is...
They're probably the more all-round team, Clontarf.
They have more set piece. They're just like, you can't give them any opportunities because they'll just have me in your 22.
That,
you know,
is 4 o'clock tomorrow, and we got UL Bows and Blackrock. So Blackrock were the dominant team in the '90s, Alison.
Yeah.
And UL Bows going for a hat trick hasn't been done for a decade since Old Belvedere did it. So
yeah, it'll be a tight game because they've both beaten each other this year already, and it'll come down literally, I'd say, to the wire like last year's. You've got some, unfortunately, Hannah O'Connor has been ruled out, the former Leinster and Irish international. She was captain, so Maeve O'Leary takes over captaincy. But UL Bows have very young backline. There's some girls, you know, interprovincial players from Connacht and Munster. And Maggie Boylan for Blackrock has scored. I think she's really high up in the try scoring rates this year. But it'll be a competitive game, yeah. And I can't call it because I haven't seen probably enough of them playing this year, but really youthful. Really, both sides are, you know, as I said, there's girls there that will play in the future for Ireland international level, and there are some that will be playing, have played under 20s. So it'll be a tight game, but looking forward to seeing how they get on. Just a shout out to Anne Marie Rooney there in Blackrock. I think she's playing over 20 years at this stage.
Right.
She's on the bench. A prop, so that's some doing. I think she's around since 2000. And sorry, Anne-Marie, for I'm not saying what age you are, but her longevity in the game is remarkable. Really, when I saw her there, to still play at that level and the same enthusiasm. But be a good game.
1:30 as well for the women's game at Viva Stadium tomorrow. Just before we finish up, folks, I remember going to semi-final tearing your lands down a few years ago, 2022, and never been to an AL game before in my life. Didn't come from a rugby school or. Had a, such a great time. Love the fact that you were just around the railings of the pitch. So you could watch and the physical exertions, like even for the props, and like it was tough the last 10 minutes. And then everybody's into the marquee, and you know there's a few drinks and pizzas and stuff. And I just thought it was a really good community day. I mean, if we're looking to grow the AIL the next few years, I mean, is it about community? Is it about realizing that there are players that will come from the AIL that can be stars of the future?
Yeah, 100%. It's about trying to make it as welcoming as possible. So on a Saturday afternoon that you get the families down, families come down, they enjoy the day, they'll come back, it's somewhere to go. And also I think there's an opportunity then when you get a family down that someone might go, actually, well, my son or daughter might really enjoy this, and that they can pop in. I know in Nace, the minis are doing well. They've women's teams from underage the whole way up, so It is. I think it's to try and make that community is so important, and it is something that the GAA do have over the clubs. But we have to try and take a banner, a kind of leaf out of there. Out of their book in terms of that, because I think that will bring more people down and it'll get more people playing the game.
Because from my perspective, like, I'm from Laois. There's only two clubs in the whole of Laois, Port Arlington and Port Laois, where you'll have a GAA club every 5 miles and they'll have huge, families that play. And like, from what I'm seeing, I am from a GAA background. My dad played a bit of rugby for a tie, believe it or not, but what I see is, I have friends now that are really into rugby. So they got into rugby like as fans. They support Leinster and they watch Leinster, but if they somehow possibly feel like maybe they can't play, or like that their kids won't play or whatever it is. I don't know what that disconnect is, because it's obviously imagined, but it's trying to then link the new fans we've inherited through the game, the popularity of the sport, with the success that Ireland and Leinster have had the last few years, and then somehow match them to their club so we can grow the game. And if you look at Port Laois, that's, if you could get, growth of new clubs, not much more than maybe four in the county, and try and then work on that. That would obviously be a big ordeal in terms of...
Laois has a bit of history. Laois produced the Rigneys.
Yeah, the Rigneys and the Mastersons, Rigneys and Mastersons, and then you've Emer Corrie there, who just played in the last World Cup, and she's actually on the bench tomorrow for Blackrock. It's her first game back after a break. So the GAA do have that.
And Port Laois also have... Port Laois Club, I think, have something like 19 or 21 players playing in the Division 1B or 1A for other clubs.
Yeah. So
in terms of being at a hotbed for club rugby and guys representing themselves, like Brian Croke, who plays there, he's from Croke, he would always say Towns Cup 2032 is going to be won.
They're trying to bring them home.
Yeah, bring them all home.
Yeah. So I don't know how that happens, but it's trying to maybe get a few more clubs within counties, and not just, I suppose, sometimes they just see Leinster as being Dublin, but try to get it outside the pale.
You, Farrelly, you got 90 seconds, you got the last word on this.
I just want, we're here to pay homage to the AAL, and I would mention one thing that didn't come up earlier when we were talking about the good old days. I think that Shannon team of the 90s, which I was unfortunate enough to play against a few times, was one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. I was with Lansdowne in 94 when we went down there and got beaten 39-0. And we had Angus McKean, Eric Elwood, Conor O'Shea, Brian Glennon, Stephen Rooney. Mm-hmm. We had a good team and they wiped the four of us. The late, great Anthony Foley, I was phenomenal that day. He got capped a few months later. And that team went on to win four in a row. It got so bad, John, at the end, they were passing the ball like soccer, going, way, way. I always remember walking shell-shocked over to a line-out, and this Limerick Shannon fan looks at me and goes, safe home now, boy, thanks for coming. They were a phenomenal team. And one of your regular contributors, Alan Quinlan, who gets, whenever his career comes up, you talk about Munster, Ireland, you want to see him playing for Shannon. He was phenomenal, and he'd never shut up. Like, yap, 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 yap.
He never shut up anyway. When
he'd be there like you. Terry Kings was our hooker. He's going to miss. He'd just be in your ear the whole time. But what a player. What a player.
Brian Driscoll played a couple of times.
Brian Driscoll played twice, as far as I know, for Blackrock. And I happened to be playing that day. He'd just been capped by Ireland on the summer tour to Australia in 99. And then he went to the World Cup and he was there for the loss to Argentina and Lons, whatever. And we had a Kiwi coach called Scotty Holden. He was like, he didn't rate Irish rugby. He was like, don't mind this Driscoll kid. He's overrated. O'Driscoll then intercepts a ball and runs 75 metres for a try, like, we're going like this. And as he was walking back, we had a hooker, Connor Toomey, known as CT, and he just walks past O'Driscoll, goes, pity you couldn't do that in Lans, boy. And then walked on.
On that note, Hugh Farrelly, Johnny Murphy, Alison Miller, thank you so much for coming on to talk about what should be a great AIL Finals day tomorrow.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball
with Energia. Proud supporters of rugby at every level across Ireland. Think of the possibilities.
This is News Talk.